And welcome to the Rick House. Folks, my name is Cyrus Farmer, and you are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, we have a lot to get into tonight, so let me tell you what you can expect to hear. We are obviously going to be talking about the Canelo-Crawford fight, and what a fight that was. Folks, even though you needed toothpicks in your eyelids to keep your eyes open, boy, oh boy, was I glad I stayed up to watch that fight. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about week two of the NFL. Lots of things happening, lots of things going on. Interesting week as this season starts to round into form. But first, I do have to talk a little bit about this story on the one and only Tom Brady. Folks, we all know how important Tom Brady is to the history of the NFL, and deservedly so. But I do have to say this. Really? We're going to let him broadcast and interview players and coaches and see what happens or find out what happens at practices and then let someone who is the part owner of the Raiders actively involved in their quest for success potentially funnel that information back to his team? Folks, I have to say this. It's not the end of the world. It's really not. And there are two reasons it's not the end of the world. But first things first, let's talk about the first reason. The first reason is not the end of the world for Brady to get any information that he has and funnel it to the Raiders is because this is the Raiders we're talking about. This is a franchise that has not made the playoffs in a couple years. I think they've made the playoffs twice in the last 23 years. Losing both times in the wild card round. So this is not exactly a juggernaut of a franchise that it used to be. They have been bad. They've been bad for a long time. I have trouble seeing them get better anytime soon, but only time will tell. So that's why you don't worry about it too much. The principle of it all bothers me. Look, you have a guy who was involved in Deflategate, this guy being Tom Brady. He was involved in the Patriots Spygate, Bill Belichick's scheme of videotaping his opponents before games and Super Bowls. And now, under the guise of a broadcaster, he is going to gather information that could be potentially used to benefit the team he has a part ownership stake in. To me, it's just not right. I mean, look, I don't care whether the competitive advantage ends up being 36% in a particular game or 1% in every single game the Raiders ever play. The fact of the matter is, it is going to be a competitive advantage. Tom Brady is a great, great, all-time great player. But it'd be nice to see him do things on the up and up every once in a while. I mean, do you have to press your advantage every single time just because you can? Just because people don't tell you no? It'd be nice to see him do something the right way every once in a while. It's weird because if you don't think he's funneling this information to the Raiders, I think you're crazy. This is a guy who actively participates in the draft. He actively participates in free agency acquisitions for the Raiders. The man's in the coaching booth, for Pete's sake, during a Monday night game. I mean, it's like, how much more active can you be? Carol and Chip, they've already confirmed that they talked to Brady several times a week. So he is actively involved with trying to help this team succeed, which is great. There is nothing wrong with that. But it's just annoying to me, even though it won't make a difference, I think, at the end of the day. It's just annoying to me that he's going to flout his position as a broadcaster to try and help his team, quote unquote, any way he can. It's not really the right thing to do, but is it the end of the world? No, it's just not. And this is another reason it's not the end of the world, right? Because the NFL doesn't require its players and or coaches to speak to broadcast crews. It's not required. Now, the NFL gives them access, these broadcast crews, to practice and facilities. And based on the quote-unquote rules, Brady's not allowed to show up to practice or to show up in these facilities. If he wants to interview a player, he's got to interview them outside of the facility borders, so on and so forth. But come on. I mean, Kevin Burkhardt, if he goes to, who's Brady's broadcast partner, if he goes to a practice of the Chiefs and he sees Mahomes is a little gimpy about halfway through the practice, you don't think he's going to tell Brady that? You know, there's nothing we can do about that, all right? There's not. But the coaches and players will police this issue on their own. They will give zero information, if they're smart, to either Tom Brady or Kevin Burkhardt or anyone with Fox Sports who's broadcasting their game, simply because you can't trust that information, you being the players or the franchise, is not going to get funneled back to the Raiders somehow. So at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. I just don't like the principle of it. I mean, Tom, I don't care what you do. Make as much money as you want. By the way, this has nothing to do with Tom Brady's money. Nobody's trying to take a single penny out of his pocket. Trust me. He's earned everything he's got. But, you know, can you at least try to do things the right way sometimes? You know, pick a lane. Either be an owner or be a broadcaster. Don't have your hands in both cookie jars looking to help each other along the way. It's, to me, it's a little rough. It's a little rough. So I did want to get that off my chest. Get started with that. Let's talk about the Canelo and Crawford fight. Folks, what a fight. I'm telling you, it was a great fight. It wasn't an all-time great fight, but it was a great fight. And I'm so glad I stayed up to watch it. Canelo, I thought, did a great job of cutting off the ring. But whenever he did cut off the ring, Canelo rarely took the opportunity to press Crawford and test his chin, try to attack, try to either keep him on the ropes or try to keep him in the corner. Whenever Canelo would cut off the ring, which he did a lot, Bud would find his way back to the middle of the ring with no real issues. And congratulations, kudos to Bud Crawford. Boy, oh boy, he was fantastic in this fight. And yes, he is an all-time great because of this fight. I mean, easily, this was the biggest victory of his career. The man is 42-0. I'm sure he wants to try at some point to get to 50-0. I'd be surprised if he retired, but we'll talk about that in a moment. As far as the fight, the two biggest surprises for me, number one was Crawford's power, and number two was his fitness. If you watch that fight, you couldn't help but notice that Crawford literally hurt Canelo more than once in the fight. And he had Canelo in trouble several times throughout the course, especially late in the fight. I heard an interview with him where he talked about, well, did you ever consider going for the knockout? And he said, I thought about it when he was in the ring. But his corner kept telling him, stick with the game plan, stick with the game plan, be smart, stay away from him. Obviously, a fighter who is on the verge of being knocked out, that's when most of the time they can be their most dangerous, because in order for you to put them away, you have to leave yourself vulnerable and they can counterpunch with power and end up knocking you out. So Crawford was disciplined. He did not go for the knockout, but he clearly had some power. I mean, that punch, we've all seen it by now. The slow motion rewind of the punch, I think it's a left from Crawford, left hook, where literally Canelo is like, it's like a Bugs Bunny punch. I mean, literally, when you look at it in slow motion, it looks like Canelo's been hit with a frying pan. He literally got hurt several times throughout the fight, and I think that's part of what made Canelo a little tentative. Clearly, Bud was using his prowess, his footwork, and his ability to actually confuse with going southpaw to traditional to southpaw to traditional. He kept Canelo off balance the entire night. The other thing we talked about, obviously, was his level of fitness. I mean, if you watched Bud come out of his corner, especially late in the rounds, in the fight, he came out of his corner. He was looking fresh as a daisy all the time. It was literally looked like he was not winded throughout most of the fight. And that was a real tribute to all the work that he put in pre-fight with his training camp. Great, great job. I have to say, I've talked to a lot of you about whether or not there should be a rematch on this fight, mainly on TikTok. And the vast majority of you think that there should not be a rematch between Canelo and Crawford. Most of you think that the result would be the same. Bud shouldn't give him a rematch for that very reason. But I ask you the question once again, if Bud doesn't retire, who is he going to fight? I mean, think about it. Supposedly, and I don't know if this is true or not, but supposedly the gate from this fight, supposedly, Canelo made $150 million off this fight and Bud got $40 million, right? So if you think about what the split would be in a rematch, you can imagine what kind of take it would be for Bud Crawford. As the defending champ. But above and beyond the money, if you're Crawford, this will help burnish your legacy beyond the boxing world. If you fight Canelo again, even if you beat him, even if you lose, it's almost better because you have a trilogy on your hands there. But even if you beat Canelo the same way you beat him the first time, it really stamps you in the public's mind as more than just a boxer, because everybody and their mother is going to watch that fight. Now, here's the key. I have to say, it was a brilliant, brilliant move putting the fight on Netflix. Boxing needs to do so much more of this with its big fights. Forget the pay-per-view. Get the public back into the sport of boxing. Then you can actually hold a gun to our head and tell us if we want to watch the fight, we have to pay $59.99 or $89.99 or $129.95, whatever. But this Netflix move was a brilliant, brilliant move because it generated so much interest in the actual fight because the vast majority of people who watched the fight, most of them already had Netflix. So it was an easy enough to do. The people who didn't have Netflix were fine adding Netflix as a subscription just so they could watch the fight. And it was a reasonable ask. So it almost doesn't matter how good or bad the fight is if you give the public access to it. And that's what Netflix did. So that was a brilliant, brilliant marketing move by Dana White, by the Saudi PIF fund guy, I forget his name, Turkish Al-Rashid or something like that. It was a brilliant move, putting the fight on Netflix. And I think boxing needs to do more of that. They don't have to do it for the next 25 years, but give us access to these big-time fights because that will grow interest in your sport and it will bring your sport back from where it is currently, which is the dead. Now, I'm not sure who Bud Crawford fights next. Again, do you want to take a chance and fight someone like David Benavidez, who is currently the light heavyweight champ, used to be a super middleweight, but, you know, not aged out of it. He waited himself out of that, went up to get the light heavyweight because there was no one to fight. I don't think you want to fool around with Benavidez. I don't put anything beyond Crawford. I really don't. But to go up to 175 to take on David Benavidez as a light heavyweight might be a big, big ask if you're trying to win the fight. Again, Bud is proven that he can do almost anything, and I wouldn't bet against him, but I will say this, that's a fight I would watch. That would be fascinating. We all know the fight started about 10 to 1 a.m. on the East Coast. It was tough. It was really tough. And to be fair, the undercard was solid. It wasn't great. But the strangest thing about the entire night, and this is why I think it wasn't an all-time great fight. It was a great fight, but not an all-time great fight. Why? because there were no knockdowns in the fight. There wasn't even a knockdown all night, even on the undercard, as far as I remember, which is something very strange. I've never, ever seen that before. I mean, to me, for a fight to be great, you have to have at least one knockdown, because whether it's the winner, eventual winner who gets knocked down, or whether it's the eventual loser who gets knocked down, you want to see someone get up from the mat, get up from the canvas, and to continue to press forward. That, in my opinion, is part of what makes a great, great fight. So this was not an all-time great fight, but it was a great fight. So glad I watched it. So glad that I saw it. I was really surprised to hear that Bud gave Canelo his belts back. It was really interesting. I'm thinking, why would he give him his belts back? But he explained it. I think he was on Stephen A. Smith's show, and he was explaining why he gave the belts back. The reason he gave them back, he said, was because Bud Crawford, he said he won Canelo's titles, not Canelo's belts. He said Canelo's belts belong to him. That's why Bud gave them back to him. And Bud thought that he should be the person to actually present him with those belts. He did it the night of the fight, after the fight, right after the fight. He gave them back. And in Bud's mind, he's going to have new belts made. And those will be his belts. But the belts that he won in the fight against Canelo, he said belonged to Canelo. And that's why he gave them back, which I thought was an interesting point of view. Yeah, it's like, strange, but nice. I have to say, I don't think I've ever heard or seen the word Riyadh as many times in one night as I did during the Canelo Crawford fight. Boy, oh boy. I mean, the Saudis, folks, are here to stay in American sports. I'm telling you right now. I mean, it was Riyadh here, Riyadh there, Riyadh everywhere. They are here to stay, like it or not, and they are going to be producing big-time events for a while. They're not going anywhere. So get used to that. It was interesting because you had forgive me for mispronouncing his name. I think it's Turkish Alashid. Or Al-Sheikh, something like that. But the head of the PIF for Saudi Arabia, sitting ringside with Jason Statham and holding court, these guys are paying top dollar and then some to have their hands in all sorts of sports that are going to be largely marketed to the American audience. They have a big-time flag football event that's being produced by the aforementioned Tom Brady. Tom's going to come out of retirement to play in the game, and he's also co-producing it. Lots of NFL people involved, Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan, Saquon Barkley, CeeDee Lamb. I think Kevin Hart is going to host the event. So it literally just goes to show you, LIV Golf was just the beginning. I mean, money talks, and I'm telling you right now, these Saudis are paying top dollar. And when someone backs up a truck to your door and says, how would you like to work for us? 9 times out of 10, you take the money. And that's exactly what people are doing now. So more power to them. I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful event, just like Canelo Crawford was a wonderful event in Las Vegas. But I sure wouldn't mind seeing a couple of big bouts held on the East Coast, particularly on the Atlantic, right? I mean, New York, Philadelphia, Washington. It would be great to see a big-time title fight held in the Garden or in D.C., even in Philadelphia. It would be great to see a big, big, big-time boxing event held on the East Coast, so we could start it at a decent hour. You know, you could start it at around 11:30 at night and then take our chances from there. But also, I think it would bring a different buzz to boxing if you have that East Coast energy. So one suggestion, I thought that actually might help boxing more than hurt it. Anyway, on to week two of the NFL season. Folks, I got to tell you, there's so many things happening in the NFL right now. It's pretty impressive. I'm going to get started with the Super Bowl rematch that took place when the Philadelphia Eagles traveled to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. This was a very hard-fought game. It was a slugfest. I think both teams played really hard. It was interesting. The Eagles still have to address some issues in their passing game, and I personally am not worried about that yet because it is early in the season, and they're literally trying to figure out who they are as a team, as an organization in 2025. It is interesting to me, though, that whenever you see Jalen Hurts, who I'm a huge fan of, whenever you see him in these two Super Bowls he's played in, he plays unbelievably. I mean, why can't you give Hurts an opportunity to air it out like he does in the Super Bowl? I mean, it's crazy. I think the man threw for like 125 yards this Sunday against Kansas City. Look, he's played incredibly well, even though he has zero stats. But guys, at some point, let's open up the offense a little bit. Let's let Jalen cook. I think he has the ability. He shows this in every big game he plays. So Saquon did a nice job, sneaky running. Had a sneaky good game running the ball, even though that Kansas City defense played tough. The true revelation from this game is that the Philadelphia Eagle defense is going to be very good as the season goes along. These guys are still getting their feet underneath them. They're still kind of trying to figure out what they want to do and how they want to do it. And I know we have a soft spot at the other corner. I get that. That is absolutely true. But there you have so many young players learning how to play the game with very little veteran leadership. You're going to expect some struggles early, but boy, did they look good against Kansas City. Za'Darius Smith basically walks off the plane and comes in and contributes with sacks, tackles, big plays. What a pro. Za'Darius Smith is going to be good all season long. I really hope he can stay healthy. And then Drew Mukuba, boy, oh boy, this safety, it's early. It's two games into his career. I get it. But Drew Mukuba has an opportunity. I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying he has an opportunity to be really, really good. He has a chance to be really good. Am I talking about Brian Dawkins good? Who knows? I have no idea. But he has a chance to be really, really good. And this guy, along with my man Quinyon Mitchell, can hold down this secondary. Also, along with Cooper DeJean, I can hold down this secondary for years to come. I was very excited to see him kind of come into his own with that pick off the Kelce tip at the goal line against Kansas City. Now, Kansas City to me looked a little out of sorts. They just don't seem to have many weapons. And as a result, I do not know why they're not trying to run the ball more often. I mean, between Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, those two rushed the ball 18 times the entire game. 18. If you know you're short on receiver help and you don't necessarily have the chemistry that you have with Rashee Rice or Xavier Worthy or Travis Kelce, run the ball more to help your offense settle in. It's going to take so much more pressure off Thornton and Marquise Brown and some of these other receivers that Kansas City has. Look, I'm glad they decided not to commit to the run this past Sunday. I'm not sure how much traction they would have gotten out of it the way the Eagles were playing, but still, you don't know until you try. If you commit to the run, it's not about gaining yards. It's about actually making people play the run so that you can pass. So that was interesting to me. I don't think Kansas City is going to be any good at all consistently until they get Rashee Rice back, unless they start to focus more on running the ball, which will be interesting to see if they do that against the Giants this week. Now, as far as the Tush push is concerned, I do have to say I have a hard time seeing it come back next year. It is just too many people get too upset by the Eagles' success rate with this particular play. Even though everyone in the league is allowed to use it, for whatever reason, the Eagles have a tremendously successful completion rate with the tush push. But I can't see it coming back next year. Get all you can out of it now, boys. Tush push till the wheels come off, because next year it's probably going to be gone. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, gritty, gutty, tough-minded team. Boy, did they play well against the Texans. And that was a great comeback win from them. Baker Mayfield really epitomizes kind of what Todd Bowles is all about and what he wants in a team. Todd's had that in his defense forever. But Baker Mayfield kind of gives him that at quarterback now. And with the weapons they have on offense, and eventually they're going to get their receiver back, they're going to be a handful. I have a ton of respect for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think if the Commanders had not beaten the Buccaneers last year in the first round of the playoffs, the Eagles may not have gotten to the Super Bowl. For whatever reason, Todd Bowles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers seem to have had the Eagles' numbers for years. And it will be really interesting to see if the Eagles can kind of snap that schneid that they haven't gotten off of in week 4, about 10 days from now, when they meet the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in week 4 down in Raymond James. Cowboys and the Giants, it was kind of a strange game as far as I was concerned. It was just big play after big play after big play. Russell played extremely well. Russell Wilson, he deserved actually to win that game. It's hard for me to feel bad for the Giants or the Cowboys when either one of them lose, but one of them has to lose. So in this case, it had to be the Giants. But Russell played incredibly well. It'll be really interesting to see what that Giant offense does against that Steve Spagnuolo Kansas City defense this coming Sunday night. The Giant defense has to be better. I mean, it's just, they don't make a big play at all. They weren't great against Washington. They were horrible against the Cowboys. The Giant defense, for all the quote-unquote talent they have, between Dexter Lawrence and Kayvon Thibodeau and Brian Burns, I mean, they have to be better. They have to find a way to stop people more often. So I would worry about that as much as I worry about the Giant offensive line if I were the Giants. Not a whole lot to say about the Bears and the Lions. I watched part of that game, first quarter. You know, as usual, the Bears do okay with their first 15 scripted plays, and then they disappear for the rest of the entire game. And the Lions, they got their feet back underneath them. It was a very impressive showing. Running up the score, this is what Dan Campbell does. It's not at the end of the world. At some point, when they get bad, somebody's going to run up the score on them more than once or twice. So, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword. But they actually played so well during this game. I'm sure that gives them a ton of confidence going into this this next week, which they're going to need, I think, playing the Ravens on Monday night. The Rams. Another gritty, gritty team, full of talent on both sides of the ball, incredibly well coached. They had a good, solid win in Tennessee this year, this week. That game this coming Sunday between the Rams and the Eagles, I think it's probably going to be one of the best games of the week. It is going to be such a good watch. This Ram team is very good. If they stay healthy, the Rams are going to be a problem all year long. They just have so much talent on both sides of the ball. And it's going to be a real test for both teams to see who can prevail this coming Sunday. That is going to be a great, great game. I'm going to find a way to watch. I'm going to be out of town, so I'm going to try to find a way to watch that game if it's the last thing that I do. I don't know how many more games, if you're the Cleveland Browns, you give Joe Flacco, or what, maybe 3 games, 4 more games? I mean, look, if they keep losing, which I have no reason to believe that they won't. At some point, if you're the Cleveland Browns, you have to decide if one of these rookies is your future at quarterback. And you're going to have to put them in there. Now, I think Cleveland is in the unique position of having 2 rookies that could potentially be the answer, but they don't know which one is the answer. So what's probably going to happen is you're going to have to give half the season to Dylan Gabriel and half the season to Shedeur Sanders. just so you know what you have going into next year. Because if one of the two, the first one, is not the answer, you have to play the second one so you know whether or not to draft a quarterback next year. So I think the Cleveland Brown search for the quarterback on their current roster begins probably in about 2 weeks. If the Browns lose again this week, I think week four, Dylan Gabriel, you are now starting quarterback. It's your turn. So we'll see what happens as far as that is concerned. Obviously, the Bills and the Packers, they continue to roll. They're doing a great job. Both teams are in great shape. They are both destined to be in the playoffs and potentially go very deep in those playoffs. I do have to ask you a question, though. How do you feel if you're Mike Brown, owner of the Bengals? You give Ja'Marr Chase an extension. You give T. Higgins an extension. After a holdout, you finally pony up and pay Trey Hendrickson, what was it, $30 million. And then you lose Burrow in week two for most of the season. If you're Mike Brown, you got to be literally looking at everyone who's ever said a bad word to him and about him. You have to be looking at all these people and saying, this is why I'm cheap. Getting on me about being cheap. I'm cheap because people get hurt. The Bengals, they just cannot win. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So they're going to have to find a way to navigate the rest of the season. Who knows if Mr. Browning is going to be able to hold the fort down for the next 3 months while Joe Burrow heals. But that was a tough break for the Bengals. You don't want to see anyone ever get hurt. But it's really hard to lose a player like Joe Burrow because it genuinely diminishes your chances to win games, obviously. So it's a tough one for them. Chargers, they played really well. They did what they do to the Raiders all the time, seems like. I was wrong about the Chargers. I think they're going to be a good team. It'll be interesting to see how they look as the season progresses. I was listening to someone on NFL radio. I forget who it was. And they were talking about how Harbaugh in year two has decided he's finally discovered that Justin Herbert was his quarterback. So he decided to open it up a little bit. I'll be interested to see how long Harbaugh decides to stay with that. I think his DNA is really just to run the ball and throw when you have to. But it'll be interesting to see how long he continues to ride Justin Herbert's arm to success, because I think at some point he's going to dial that back and try to get back to running the football more often. And we'll see if that affects Herbert as far as his effectiveness in these games. But it's going to be interesting. Some games I'm really looking forward to. We talked about some of them earlier. Rams, Eagles, Broncos, Chargers, Cowboys, Bears, and Lions, Ravens. That Lions, Ravens game has a chance to be the best game of the week. Easily. You have two teams who really need to make a statement. They both lost in different ways their first game of the season. They both bounced back with convincing wins in week two. Week three is going to be a free-for-all. It is going to be a real battle royale. I'll be fascinated to see who comes out on top in that matchup. Because both teams obviously are capable. I think the game's being played in Baltimore. I'm not positive about that, but I think it's in Baltimore. It should be a whale of a matchup. And of course, I want to see a little bit of Broncos Chargers simply because I haven't had a chance to see the Chargers much. And I want to see how they play against a Broncos team that is kind of underwhelmed a little bit. And it's a big matchup for both teams. 2-0 versus 1-1. And they're really going to say they both need the game, which is true because they do. Bears, Cowboys. That is going to be fascinating. You have Matt Eberflus, the Cowboy defensive coordinator, going up against Caleb Williams, whom he coached for a few games before he was fired in Chicago. And Ben Johnson going up against Eberflus. This could be another tough week for the Bears. Let's be absolutely honest. I mean, they could embarrass that Chicago offense, and it could be a long night or day for the Bears. It's not like the Cowboys or Giant Killers. They're not, they're not an unbeatable team, but, you know, the Bears are not exactly 85 Bears this year either. So it could be a tough night for the Bears. I think the Cowboys will probably find a way to try to win that game. Folks, I have to tell you, I've had such a good time doing this show. And I want to thank you all for coming along with me to watch. This is a show that you can watch, you can listen to it. We're here for you every week, week in, week out, and we're doing everything we can to bring you the kind of enjoyment that you get out of a place that you can't find this kind of content anywhere else, period. And we're happy to do it for you. Now, next week will be our one-year anniversary. Believe it or not, look at how time flies. Yes, 52 weeks ago from next week, we started this show, and we want to thank all of you who came along with us for this ride. We've enjoyed every minute of it, the ups and the downs, and the good and the bad. So we will continue to bring you content that you can't find anywhere else, and we are happy to do it. Once again, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. My name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tea podcast. We will be back at you next week with more scintillating content. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.